This is the Thanks for Sharing podcast, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship.
Remember to subscribe and download episodes in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or the Podbean app. You can find more Thanks for Sharing at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/healingpaths. That's paths with an S. Hello and welcome to the Thanks for Sharing podcast. I'm John T.
I'm Jackie P.
We're starting today a five-part series on the five things functional adults can do. We borrowed that idea from Pia Melody, and we were talking before we started recording. She dropped these five things that functional adults can do in this talk on shame that we purchased from her, and we haven't really found that in any of her other stuff.
Right. I think she does. I think I've seen at where she works this whole big like whiteboard kind of thing that she's developed, but I've never had time to really stand in front of it and digest it.
Okay.
But yeah.
So we're going to give kind of our take on that idea of Pia Melody's, and we put a link in the show notes to her website. Right. I would highly recommend getting to know her work more if you want to work more on the emotional and relational side of your recovery.
Yeah.
There's really, really good stuff there. So the first aspect we're going to look at is that functional adults can experience appropriate self-esteem and affirm themselves from within.
Right. So important to do.
Yeah.
Which, and I will point out, like, is not something kids can do.
No.
Like, kids are reliant upon their external world to reflect back who they are and to get a sense of themselves through others.
You know, as I was thinking about this episode, and thinking about experiences I might pull from this, I thought, you know, when you're saying kids can't do this, they have to pull it from adults and others around them. I thought, like, when did I start having appropriate esteem, and when did I start being able to affirm myself from within?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until well into adulthood.
Yeah.
That's not something that I think gets picked up accidentally through life. I think it needs to be a pretty deliberate thing on the part of caregivers,
right,
to help kids with that and give that to kids.
Well, and I have teenagers right now, and, you know, I have one. I mean, people will say to me, daughter number three particularly, they're like, she has such great self-esteem. And I maybe for a 17-year-old, I would agree,
yeah,
right? But part of that is still, like, I don't know how much of it comes from within. Like, she still gets some esteem from the clothes she wears,
mm-hmm,
how she does her makeup, how her hair looks, right? Like, all of that is still part of how she's affirming herself,
mm-hmm,
is I've got this certain look, right? And this last Christmas, we were going Christmas shopping because I just take my girls and we shop for the clothes and they buy them and it's no surprise, but everyone's happy.
No magic Christmas at the pack house.
And, but we have fun going shopping. And so we were shopping and there was this one store that, you know, daughter number three tends to buy clothes from. And actually several of my daughters buy clothes from this store. So I was like, oh, do we want to go to this store after, you know, we're done here? And daughter number three was like, well, I don't buy clothes from there anymore, which was news to me, you know, because
yeah,
I think I had bought her something in October. And I said, oh, you don't? And she was like, Mom, my style's changed. And I was like, oh, okay.
Get with it.
What is your style now? And she was like, I'm like skater. And I was like, oh, okay. I was not aware of that. And where do skaters buy their clothes? So we had to hit those stores.
Yeah. And which that is developmentally appropriate for a 17-year-old.
Right. Yes.
And I think that's kind of where that developing healthy esteem and the ability to affirm yourself starts, is that let me try on some different modes.
Right.
Let me try on some different me's and see what's a fit, see, mm-hmm, what feels good to me. And I think that real focus on what feels good to me and what's a fit for me,
mm-hmm,
is really where that taking the esteem and the affirmation inboard starts to go.
Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, I have a client that I'm working with now, and I remember going through the stage myself in adulthood and starting to say, like, taking something really simple, like, what is my style of clothing?
Mm-hmm.
And having that be an expression of who I am internally and how I view myself, and my clothes, like how I dress my body or the clothes that I wear are a reflection, like this is syncing up, mm-hmm. versus, I don't know, I'm just going to put these clothes on and hope that I feel good.
Yeah.
But that, or that it's coming from, you know, this external, this is what I wear, and that defines who I am inside.
Or put these clothes on and do this thing and then see if it makes others feel good.
Right.
See if I get the right response from them.
Yeah.
So as we've been talking, the words esteem and affirmation, I think, get thrown around a lot. Mm-hmm. What exactly are we talking about when we're talking about, let's say, self-esteem?
So for me, I think this word probably gets overused.
Yeah. And very misunderstood.
Yes. I think it gets so overused that it's almost lost meaning and is really vague and undefined. For me, I would say esteem or self-esteem is really kind of a knowing of the self.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I would define it in the most basic, simplest terms.
Yeah. I was talking to a client last night, and she was talking to me about my perceptions of her. And what if I tell you this, like, is this going to make you change how you feel about me? And I was reflecting as we were having this conversation, I was reflecting, the more I know about a person, the higher my regard goes for them, by and large.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people, and I need to work on this, there's some people that sometimes the more I know, the less I want to know. But I'd say by and large, the more I know about a person, the higher regard I have for them, the more respect I have for them, the more compassion I have for them. So I think that's a really great place to start with self-esteem. And it's got to be accurate knowledge of the self, right?
Right.
It can't be based on this totally superficial knowledge of the self.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who do I like to spend time with? What do they like to do? And what do I like to do with them?
Mm-hmm.
I think really diving deep and looking at what makes us tick, what makes our likes and dislikes happen. Mm-hmm. There's a person I'm working with right now, and we're working on his shame around sexuality. And it's really interesting to see his self-compassion develop just as we have these frank conversations about what he likes and doesn't like and why he likes and doesn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, you know, when he was coming from this place of I've got to be and do all of the right things, we could talk about that stuff, but it didn't lead to self-knowledge. Mm-hmm. It led a lot more to, like, he wanted to separate from that part or ignore that part or minimize it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we're developing healthy self-esteem, it's really this willingness to look at the self and observe the self and understand our own story.
Yeah, and I think sometimes that can start with clients at some of the basic, like, these basic questions about ourselves aren't going to yield a lot of depth.
Yeah.
But we still may need to know about that. Mm-hmm. Like, I was talking to a friend the other day, and she was talking about her favorite dessert. And I don't even remember what it was. It was like three words or something, and it sounded super fancy, right? And I was just, and she was like, what's your favorite? Like, if you're going to treat yourself, like, what's your go-to treat?
Did she say frozen Otter Pops? Those are really good.
Three words. I don't know. They leave a funny aftertaste in my mouth and make me kind of cough. But anyway, it was some chocolate decadent. I don't even know. I was just like, oh, that sounds impressive, right?
Yeah.
And so she was just like, what's your favorite treat? And I was like, let me think about it. And I mean, it only took a couple of seconds, but then I almost felt some shame.
What's wrong with me?
Because mine does not sound fancy, right?
It was frozen Otter Pops.
Mine literally is one of those, like, yeast donuts with the chocolate frosting on the top.
There are a few things that are better than that, though.
I love those. Like,
yeah.
And I don't have them very often, maybe, you know, four times a year, five times a year. I don't know. But those are my favorite.
On a side note, we went to Denver a couple weekends ago, and they have a Voodoo Donuts in Denver.
Yes.
And so we were walking there, and there were about four homeless people that stopped us and asked for money on the way. And I said, I don't have cash, but we're going to Voodoo Donuts. Do you want a donut? So we took orders along the way.
I love it.
So they're like, we want a bacon maple bar and whatever. So we had these great donuts, and my wife and I were looking at the menu what we wanted, and they have this buttermilk bar.
Oh, yeah.
And literally, all it is a buttermilk donut with some glaze on it.
Yes.
That was the best. I looked at all the other ones with, like, all the frosting and the bacon and whatever on it, and that buttermilk bar, like, I think simple is better.
When we were there in Oregon, Portland has a Voodoo. And my husband got the buttermilk bar, mm-hmm. and I just got the yeast donut with the chocolate frosting. You know, my kids mm-hmm. had all the, like, fruity pebbles on the top and mm-hmm. all that stuff. And I was just, and they were like, "Mom, that's so you." And I was like, "Yep."
Well, and you notice that, like, when you start to look at that in comparison with others, rather than looking at what does that do for me, mm-hmm. there is shame that can come up.
Right.
Like, oh, I must not be as fancy or I must not be as refined. But when we get really focused on what my likes and dislikes are, even on the surface, and mm-hmm. it's just in the context of us, I think those can be some really deeply meaningful experiences.
Yeah.
And some really great opportunities to spend time with the self.
So let's move into, what are your thoughts on the word affirmation?
So I was writing the show notes for this before we started talking, and what immediately came to mind was Stuart Smalley
uh-huh.
from Saturday Night Live, Al Franken's character that sits in the mirror and says, "I'm smart enough, I'm good enough, and doggone it, people like me."
Gosh darn it, people like me.
And I actually found out in my research, Al Franken is a member of Al-Anon, and Stuart Smalley came from he described it as a conglomerate of the quote-unquote best parts of Al-Anon. And
which just makes you love him all the more.
Right? Right?
Yes.
So when I thought of affirmations before, my thought was corny sayings that you say to yourself over and over again to brainwash yourself into believing things that really aren't true about you, but you wish were true about you. That's where I started mm-hmm. with my understanding of affirmations. Now I understand affirmations come after some actually hard work and hard looks at the mm-hmm. self. I don't think we get to accurate affirmations until we're grounded in where we're at right now and acknowledging that and mm-hmm. acknowledging that that's different from where we want to be.
Right.
And then we call upon our strengths with awareness of our weaknesses, and we remind ourselves of the strengths that we have that will help us get to where we want to go. Mm-hmm.
So maybe a little bit different than, like, there's a lot of great, like, motivational quotes
uh-huh.
or things like that, and those can work, but I find with clients, and even for myself, something that's coming from me,
yeah,
about me, tends to work better than something somebody else said about their life. Even mm-hmm. though I can read that and really relate to that, and I might feel a strength in reading that, it doesn't always necessarily stick with me or come to me at those times when I need my own affirmations.
Mm-hmm. So as you're talking about that, I'm wondering, like, how would you describe affirmations starting as an external experience, like with caregivers helping us to recognize our strengths? Mm-hmm. How does that go from being an external experience to bringing that inboard where we can do that for ourselves accurately?
So, you know, one of the things, again, I'm going to go with, you know, parenting, because I've had kids that are going through some of these stages, not that we're at an end game by any means, but, you know, I think sometimes, and my kids sometimes will even come to me and say, "Mom, tell me again that I can do this."
Yeah.
Right? And what that means is they need me to believe in them, and mm-hmm. they know that I do. But I have to remind them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when it starts to shift, and my kids are at the ages where it is starting to shift, it's where, you know, either they can do that themselves, but more importantly, they can do it themselves because they have evidence of those things being true.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's this, I mean, one of the things that I'll say to my kids sometimes is just this. It's going to be all right. Like mm-hmm. if they're having test anxiety and they're just like, stressing themselves out. And I'll say, like, look, even if you don't do the best on this test, you're going to be okay. Like, you're a good person. You have a good head on your shoulders. And if this isn't your best performance, you can retake it. You can improve. Mm-hmm. There's always a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that. They've done that. They've had to retake some things or do some extra credit. And thus far, you know, none of them have failed school.
Yeah. Although, like you said, like, the story's not done by any means, right? I really liked what you said about there being evidence of the action there. I think that's a pretty key piece to affirmations. Like, affirmations are not fantasy.
Right.
And that reminds me of I don't remember the name of the study or the exact circumstances, but they looked at the difference. I think they gave kids puzzles to do, and the puzzles varied in difficulty. And in one group, when they completed the puzzle, they would say something like, "You're so smart," mm. or "You're so good at puzzles." And in the other group, they would affirm with things like, "You're working really hard. I can see that you're trying. Mm. I can see you figuring this out." Like, they really focused on the objective rather mm-hmm. than the subjective. And what they discovered is they increased the intensity or the difficulty of these puzzles. The group that got the "You're so smart," they gave up much quicker than the group that was told, "Wow, you worked really hard." Mm. Or, "I can see that you're taking this seriously." And I think some of what that illustrates to me is the difference between affirmations that float on the surface for us.
Right.
Like those motivational quotes, right. which I think can be great. I love it when I resonate with one.
Uh-huh.
But I also have, I don't know how many quote journals I started as a teenager thinking like, "This is going to set the course for my life. And yeah. I'm going to have so much wisdom compiled here." And then like 3 weeks later, nothing ever got added to it ever again.
Right. And you forgot what you had written in the first place.
Never went back to read it. I think what that highlights is that when we are focused on action and the evidence of our abilities, mm-hmm. Especially our ability to figure things out or our ability to cope.
Yeah.
I think that's where some of that inborn confidence comes from. We know there's a track record of not just doing hard things, but there's a track record of running up
yeah.
against hard things. And then being able to work through that.
Well, and that makes sense with the example that you used from the study, because if my affirmation is "I am smart," but I do something that is less than smart, right? Mm-hmm. Or doesn't quite match up with my definition of smart, there goes my affirmation.
Yeah.
What do I do now, right? And so it makes sense that they would give up earlier because... Or that they don't risk trying anything in which they might not be smart.
Yeah.
And where's the growth? Where's the challenge that comes in that, right? But I think with affirmations, we're also touching up against building resilience.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the favorite affirmations that works well for me, it's really simple. But when I'm in something really difficult or very painful, one of the affirmations that I will tell myself is, "I will heal."
Mm-hmm.
And... I have evidence of that. Like, mm-hmm. there's been a lot of difficult, painful things that I've gone through in my life, and I have healed. And so when something comes, again, I can say to myself, "This will heal. You will heal." But I also give myself permission to be in the messiness and the unhealed part of it, knowing that I'll get there.
When I really noticed the blending there, like when you're reminding yourself, "I will heal," at the same time that you're summoning your strength, you're summoning those memories of those really difficult things.
Right.
I don't think I can stress this enough. Affirmations can't be the sanitized version of ourselves. I think affirmations are reminding ourselves of the whole self, of the whole story,
mm-hmm.
And how we work through those difficult parts of the story, mm-hmm. the strengths that we use to use that, the relationships, like that's an affirmation for me. When I'm in a difficult situation, reminding myself, I have people I can talk to.
Mm-hmm.
That's
one I'm of the not alone.
That, yeah.
That's a big one. Yeah.
Definitely calls out that resiliency.
Yep.
I was wondering, I want to go back to self-esteem, for a little while. Like, you talked about how it's overused and mm-hmm. has kind of lost a lot of meaning. Maybe we could talk for a minute about what appropriate levels of self-esteem are. So mm-hmm. that's one of the things Pia Melody says, we can experience
right.
appropriate levels.
Right.
I think, you know, most of the time when we think self-esteem, we get a picture, depending on which generation you're from, you may get a picture of the word that has ruined modern America. Or you can get this picture of, you know, a person who's really turned inward and kind of selfish and not really mm-hmm. aware of others.
Right, because I think that appropriate levels of self-esteem would not include ignorance.
No.
Or not ignorance, that's not what I mean. Although it could. I meant arrogance.
Yeah.
Sounds the same. that's why I got it confused.
Feels the same.
Right. Yeah, and I can... It's always interesting to me, like, when people are talking about somebody who is extremely arrogant and very cocky, and they'll say, like, "Oh, they're just so confident." Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes I'll say it, depending on who I'm with, and other times I just think it, and I'm like, that is not confidence at all.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised how many people mistake cockiness and arrogance for confident.
You know, I think, again, just like affirmations need to go deep. I think self-esteem needs to go deep. Mm-hmm. Just being assured or being self-assured that you can do something without evidence to back it up, that's not real confidence. Mm-hmm. That's actually really, really insecure.
Yes. I was thinking, this is another story about daughter number three. Not that I don't love all of my daughters, but, you know, this is a daughter number three
it's
story.
It's a rich library.
It is. She is, I had three of my girls who play competitive soccer, and she is one, you know, she was born with like way too much energy for a tiny little baby body. And we have been struggling with that all of her 17 years.
She still hasn't grown into it.
But when we signed her up for soccer, like, it was this like, oh, what a great place to channel all of this energy. And she loved it. And she absolutely loves to play soccer. And I like watching all of my girls play. They all play differently, and they all play kind of, I can see all of their personalities showing up in the way that they play soccer. But she has always, daughter number three has always had coaches who are very complimentary of her, tell her she's going to do great things, yada, yada, yada. So when she was in ninth grade, a freshman, she could try out for the high school soccer team. And the her club coach, not all freshmen make it. And there was, on her team, there were probably four or five different high schools that all the players went to. And so he was kind of talking to me, and he was talking to everybody about what happens if your daughter doesn't make the high school team their freshman year. We have a plan, and this is what it would look like. And he told me, he said, I think like your daughter's probably got the best shot of making the team, not really planning on her doing this plan B, but you know. Well, it turns out that she was the only one who did not make her high school team. And she, I mean, it was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking for her. I remember because they posted the list on a Thursday night, and I was at work still. And my husband just sent the text to me and just said, she didn't make the team. And her older sister made the team. Mm. And I was sick. Like, I remember thinking to myself, I don't want to go home.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, like, I was so sad for her. And, you know, I've talked before a little bit about how I can avoid. And so I was just like, I'll just stay at work all night. Like, I didn't know what to say, right? Because I know saying anything doesn't fix it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I didn't avoid. I went home. My husband had said, like, she came home, went up to her room. He's like, she has not come out. So I went up to her room. I sat down on her bed. She had clearly been crying. And I just said, hey, do you want to talk? And she said, no. And I said, okay. So I said, I want you to know, you know, I love you and I'm sorry. And I left. And the next morning I went upstairs and, I mean, just swollen eyes, crying. And, you know, I just said to her, I said, you know what, Kelly, I think this is the first time in your life that you have wanted something and not gotten it. Like, up until this point, you know, she was 15. I said, everything you've ever wanted, you've gotten.
Yeah.
And I said, and now life is saying you need to learn how to deal when you don't get what you want. You know, and I said, and it's no fault of your own. Like, it's not that you should have worked harder. Like, you work harder. Your coach says this. You work harder than most girls on your team. So you work hard. You give it 100%. You have skills. You have commitment. You're dedicated. You're a leader. You're positive. None of that. Like, you could not have changed this, whether it was politics, whether, I don't know what it was. But you didn't get what you wanted. And there's no reason for it. You know, and so I said, give yourself the weekend. Cry, be angry, isolate, talk about how unfair it is, whatever. But Monday morning, we're going to figure out how to pick yourself back up from this and move forward. Mm-hmm. And I said, because it is so important to learn how to rise.
Yeah.
It's so important to figure out, like, when life has pushed you down, how to come back from that. And, you know, she had some great coaches in the Plan B stuff who worked with her, and she had a great, it's called a provisional season. And they still built her up and all of that great stuff. So she had people supporting her. But I think there is stuff that we learn about ourselves through these difficult things if we will allow it.
Yeah. And I think with that learning, like, there's this view of where we fit in the universe. I think appropriate self-esteem is somewhere between understanding that we are at least more than the dust of the earth, mm-hmm. and a little less than the God of the universe.
Right.
And I don't know if there's one peg on that scale in between that's the appropriate esteem level. I think it really depends on the situation.
Right. But it was a reminder for her that, guess what? Bad things happen to you because mm-hmm. you're not more special than anybody else. Mm-hmm. Like, all of us have had these things happen to us, and you're just like the rest of us. Yeah. Right? But, I mean, you're a good person, and you're unique, and you're all of that, but you're not so unique that you get to fly by and have nothing touch you.
That flying by and nothing touching us, this wasn't anything near that caliber, but I remember the first paper I wrote in college for my English class. I got it back, and it was like a D-. Mm. And in my, I'm really close to the God of the universe thinking, I went to the professor, and I was like, I don't write D-minus papers. And he's like, well, you did. I said, no, I'm a good writer. And he's like, you didn't show it here. He's like, clearly I don't think you're getting this. Do you want some help? And I'm really glad that he asked that, because I don't think it would have crossed my mind to be like, to show me what I did. Mm. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, here's my office hours. Come in tomorrow. I'll show you, and I'll give you a chance to rewrite this. It won't be for full credit, but I'll give you a chance to rewrite this. So we go and talk, and he's like, what makes this good writing? And I was like, I don't know. I've just always been told that I was a good writer. And he was like, can you remember the last time you were told that? And I was like, probably my 9th grade English teacher. And he's like, oh, yeah, this is 9th grade. And he said, you've repeated yourself. You haven't really said anything original. You could do this same paper in 2 paragraphs and it would have been just as thorough, and you took 5 pages to do it. So he helped me. He gave me some points, and I rewrote the paper. And every paper after that, I asked him, like, can we talk about this one? Like, here's what I learned from it. Here's what I tried differently. And you talked about telling your daughter, you know, on Monday we're going to figure out what you need to do to rise. Mm-hmm. I think that appropriate level of self-esteem helps us know when we need to call out some of the better angels of our nature and engage those to overcome difficulty. And other times, and Pia Melody talks about this in one of the later things functional adults can do, to know when we need to self-edit or self-censor so that we're not grandiose.
Right.
And, like, I can still remember, his name was Rodney Marchant, the professor. I can still remember his eyes rolling, like, so far back in his head. Where I said, no, I'm a good writer. But I really think that that's, I think self-esteem needs to be fluid, because not every situation in our life teaches us the same thing about ourselves.
Right. Well, and if our self-esteem isn't fluid, right, and we can move with it, there's not growth that happens in rigidity.
Yeah.
So if we have it really rigid, and I'm smart, I'm a good writer, I'm a good soccer player, whatever that is, then how do we exceed that and become something more?
Yeah. And that was, like, for me in college, that was the first time I think I ever had to put effort into my schoolwork. And it knocked me on my butt. But I was really glad for that opportunity, because I don't think the rest of college would have went the way that it went had I not learned that, oh, school actually requires effort at some point.
Well, and I think there's a time for this kind of learning, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when we're 3 and 4, that is not necessarily, I mean, sometimes life happens that way, you know, but hopefully, I mean, you've got young kids, and probably most of what you're doing is still sending them positive images about themselves and reflecting that to them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, you might correct if they're misbehaving or something like that, and letting them know what limits are. But at those young ages, we really are dependent upon some positive things coming in that are setting this message within us that I am lovable.
Yeah.
That I am a good person, that I have value, that I matter.
And I think that those messages, whether we're getting them in childhood, or we're fortunate enough to have that work happen in childhood, or whether we need to do it in adulthood, those messages need to be both implicit and explicit.
Yeah.
The images coming to my mind from the book, The Help, where, what's her name? Abilene?
Yeah.
Was the main, the little girl that she took care of, and she'd say, you is good, you is kind, you is important. And that was, and in the movie they really show kind of that that interaction a lot. And that was a good example, I think, of some of that explicit, like, right. let me tell you what I see yep. in you. And then that implicit, like, she had eye contact while that was mm-hmm. happening. It was in these intimate moments.
It felt genuine, mm-hmm. right? So she could really believe that because that's how Abilene treated her. Mm-hmm. So she knew that that was true because it matched how Abilene felt about mm-hmm. her.
So as adults, when we're trying to get this ability of functional adults, we have to be very mindful about what explicitly we put in and mm-hmm. also the circumstances implicitly we put ourselves in.
Right.
I think even as adults taking esteem inboard, we need to have people around us who will esteem us mm-hmm. Accurately.
Right.
And will be honest with us about their appraisals.
Yeah.
And we all, oh, go ahead.
And I was going to say, and then sometimes later, like maybe later teenage years and then early 20s, you know, maybe even mid to late 20s, that's where we start to recognize that, like, yes, I do matter. And yes, I have value. And so does everybody else.
Yeah.
Right? That, like, I don't matter more than others.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I also think, I mean, we've worked with clients before who in their family of origin was really raised with this, because you're a so-and-so, you are better than everybody else. And we see how that cripples them in adulthood and they are not able to have functional relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I term that, like, that's abusive. If that's the family yeah. message you got, that was abusive. Not reportable abuse, but it's abusive in terms of it did not prepare you to be a functional adult.
Pia Melody will talk about the process of becoming a functional adult is about maturity.
Right.
And I think that's the process we go through to get emotionally healthy is maturing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably a good place to push pause there
yes.
on this topic.
We'll come back next episode on the second trait of functional adulthood. As we close this episode, remember that your story matters. Remember there is something meaningful in every chapter. Don't wait to share your story till it is finished.
You can share your story with us now on Facebook. Our page is Healing Paths, Inc. or on our website, www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com. We have yet to have anyone use the comment section, so be the first. You'll get a medal. It'll be great. We'll be back next week.
Thanks. This podcast is solely for the purpose of information and entertainment and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help.
At the end of another episode, we want to remind you that nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress.
And remember the prayer of the perfectionist. Help me remember I can't do it all. Help me to take things one step at a time, and that the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me.
Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me to be able to separate all that I am learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone, that I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastery. I am enough. Amen.